Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Two unlikely friends, a descendant of slave owners and a descendant of slaves, traveled across the world to trace the roots of those racial barriers as they themselves tried to heal from them. The story of that journey is told in a book, Gather at the Table, The Healing Journey of a Daughter of Slavery and a Son of the Slave Trade. Its authors Sharon Leslie Morgan and Thomas Norman DeWolf join me now. Hello, both of you. Thank you very much for coming on WNYC.
Good morning.
Morning.
Sharon, will you start and tell us about this journey and its genesis?
Well, what we did was Tom and I met at a program at Eastern Mennonite University that was dealing with how to overcome trauma. And what we learned during that was that there's a lot of generational trauma over the subject of slavery, because for both sides of the picture, both groups of people, it was an extraordinarily traumatic event. And we've inherited that through generations. I got interested in that type of study because of my interest in genealogy. And when I met Tom and found out that he was a descendant of the largest slave-owning dynasty in U.S. history, we ended up having conversations that led us to try to see the story from the black side and from the white side, and whether or not there would be a way in undertaking that journey for us to be able to heal.
So how did you do that together, Tom? What were the actual steps on the journey?
You know, the program that we were working through, STAR, Strategies for Trauma Awareness and Resilience, you know, understanding this, any unhealed trauma is going to get passed forward. There's four parts, I guess, to the healing model, and one is acknowledging, researching history, really understanding personal history, national history with real openness and honesty. And the second is making connections with other people, both across racial lines and within your own racial lines, to develop and deepen understanding of other people. And then exploring ways to heal through dialogue, listening, ritual, ceremony, what have you, and then taking actions, actively working to undo systemic and institutional racial inequality and injustice. That's sort of the model, and it sounds kind of simple, but it's the actual doing of it that I think a lot of people, you know, speaking as a white man, a lot of white people really avoid dealing with these issues, and it may be fear, greed, it may be fear or shame or you know, embarrassment, whatever it may be. But we see the damage to everyone playing out. You know, that you've just had this wonderful conversation on politics and the undercurrent of racism, just in the whole election political arena. Is emblematic of what we continue to deal with in America by not dealing with these issues of race.
Sharon, can you talk more about that generational trauma that you mentioned before? Is it something that you felt you were personally experiencing as a result of your a slave ancestry?
No doubt about it. When I was a child, my great great grandmother was still living, and she had been enslaved. It was a topic that people did not talk about a lot, but you knew that it had happened, and you knew that something very bad had happened because people wouldn't talk about it. And you would get these very cryptic messages about how difficult life was, but you never really could put any detail on it. And we see things that happen in the African American community where the rifts in families and the lost people, I mean, I don't know. I know my great-great-grandparents. I know their names. But I have no idea if they had brothers and sisters, if they had other children besides the ones whose names I know. You don't know if somebody was sold off. There was a lynching in my family. There were a lot of things that happened after slavery that continued to discriminate and abuse people. So, yes, I mean, it's like year after year, and I can think back to things that happened to me, things that happened to my mother, things that happened to my grandparents. During the Great Migration, everybody left the South, so obviously things were pretty bad.
So what did you and Tom do, and was it like a personal truth and reconciliation commission kind of thing, where you each represented a lot of people other than yourselves?
You might describe it in that way. I think the big thing that we did was we went on a road tour to sort of revisit the scene of the crime. So we went to Rhode Island, where Tom's ancestors came from, and we saw the mansion that they lived in, and we saw the warehouse on the docks where their ships docked. We went to Alabama and Mississippi so that I could look into my family. We went into cemeteries and looked for graves. We looked for homesteads. We went to courthouses and looked up records. And what it was being able to share the experience with another person. One big example would be in a courthouse, we're looking for marriage records. Tom easily finds a marriage record along with a handwritten note from somebody from the 1800s. And it's sort of like his records are very easy to find. And then when I go look for my records, they're in a separate marriage book for black people. So, and he was kind of shocked because it's like, wow, I didn't realize they have a separate book for this. And so I think that white people don't get to see that, and we don't get to see what white people see.
Yeah.
So the point was both of us seeing it from different sides at the same time.
Tom,
being able to digest it in conversation.
Tom, you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, you know, being raised as a white person, there's nothing in my experience that was overt about this, but it's clear that the way that the vast majority of white people are raised is with an unconsciousness about issues of race. It's sort of like I'm the default color. There's, you know, African American people, Asian American people, you know, Hispanic, Latino. I'm just American. And so being raised that way, I think there's a certain inherited blindness to issues of race and how horribly it impacts people of color in, you know, whether it's politics, religion, jobs, education, healthcare, the criminal justice system. You know, I sort of, the fallback is, why can't people just get over it? You know, slavery ended 150 years ago. Get over it. And not recognizing how much it's not over. And that's, you know, that's been what I think the real awakening for me over the past 10 years. I mean, first discovering my connection to this slave trading ancestry, and then really looking for a way to move beyond this, to really acknowledge the true history of this country, the fullness of the history of this country.
So in that process for you, did you also look for your ancestors' point of view or experience to find anything to be sympathetic with, or as they saw their own lives to be sympathetic with, or is it just about the horrors of the institution that they were part and parcel of?
That's a terrific question, because that's exactly right. If you know, in the same way that I look at my ancestors, if my interest is in creating an us versus them kind of perspective, that they're horrible and I'm not so horrible, I'm not really getting anywhere. It just continues the separation. So, you know, not excusing what took place and recognizing the horror of what was perpetrated by my ancestors, I also try to put in place a perspective of understanding why, how, you know, people could perpetuate this kind of damage.
What kind of an answer to that question did you get?
Boy, it's still unfolding, I'll be honest with you, because it's hard to be sympathetic with people who are running slave ships. I end up with, it's easier to have some sympathy for the people who become abolitionists, or the people who walk away from the slave trade in horror. It's easier to be sympathetic with the wives, for instance. Even though everybody's touched by it. And that's part of it, is recognizing my ancestors may have been directly involved, but anyone who's white living in this country in the 1700s, 1800s was, eating rice, smoking tobacco, drinking coffee, using sugar, you know, wearing cotton. Everyone's involved in one way or another because it was the fuel of our economy was the stolen labor of enslaved people. So, if you're going to be angry at a plantation owner or a slave ship captain, you got to recognize the bankers and the insurance companies and the storekeepers that we're all connected to this. So we better find that connection with each other.
Sharon, what do you hope other people will do after reading your book? Anything that's affirmative, that's action-oriented on their own parts?
I think what we hope most is that people will, one, recognize that this really is an issue and that it is something that if we don't do it, we are not ever going to overcome the problems between the races. And this election campaign seems a perfect example for me that we're not post-racial and it's not going to happen anytime soon unless people do something. The biggest thing that a person can do, you start with yourself. And you open your mind and become more interested in what other people have to say. And then you work in your family circle, and then you build it outward from that. Once you change your personal attitude, it makes an entirely a huge difference in how you relate to other people and how you think about things. So I think it's making that individual change and then trying to spread that in your community.
And do that to some degree by having more conversations about history and where we all came from?
Because a lot of the power comes in the knowing. It is very comforting to finally be able to have names that I can put on people who used to be lost to me, mm-hmm. to have details put into stories that they were big family secrets, and now it's out in the open, and now I know. And it makes me feel better. I know more who I am. I know who my family is, and I just have a much broader point of view about other people.
Tom, we have like 20 seconds for a soundbite answer on the same question, what you hope people will do after reading your book.
You know, take action to dismantle racist systems. I mean, that's what we're living in. You know, the individual change is the important starting place, but it's really getting to the systems that continue. And, you know, we'll talk a lot more about this. We'll be at the Quaker Meeting House down near Union Station on October 20th at 3 in the afternoon. Everyone's welcome. They can learn more information at our website, gatherthetable.net.
Okay. And we'll give more information about the upcoming events. And we thank you very much for joining us. Thomas Norman DeWolf, Sharon Leslie Morgan. The book is Gather at the Table, The Healing Journey of a Daughter of Slavery and a Son of the Slave Trade. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.